Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and the rest of Africa this Monday, December 2nd, 2024. Community leaders in Eastern Equatorial State accuse an American nonprofit for creating tension in Lafon County.
They said they don't want another center in Kuji. As well, they don't want also Kata Center continue operating in their land. So because their base, it is in their land. So therefore, they don't want Kata Center now in their land as well in their area.
And the National Security Bill is sent back to the parliament for amendment.
We strongly believe that this National Security Bill or law that was passed here by the SPLM using the mechanical majority was not done in conformity with the Supreme Law, because the Supreme Law has not given them, the Parliament, powers to make laws contrary to the Constitution.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some members of South Sudan's parliament at the National Transitional Legislative Assembly have welcomed a decision by the presidency to return the national security law passed a month ago for amendment. A lawmaker who voted for the bill says it's good for the security of the nation, while other lawmakers say there's a need to make laws that are for the country. The bill was widely condemned by rights activists and the international community. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Juba.
Some members of parliament have welcomed the return of the National Security Act, such as Peter Lomude, who says lawmakers should work for the national interest of South Sudanese people.
We strongly believe that this National Security Bill or law that was passed here by the SPLM using the mechanical majority was not done in conformity with the Supreme Law, because the Supreme Law has not given them, the parliament, powers to make laws contrary to the Constitution. That is our standard. This law, these two sections, 54, 55, and 57, should be removed. Unfortunately, it went, after the SPLM used their mechanical majority, they were able to pass it the way that they want. When you represent people, let's make good laws for the people that you represent. It should not be a matter of a party, because the implementation of laws does not know anybody from a party. It affects everybody.
MP Joel Nomngek, who represents Lake States, says he is glad the bill is back for revision.
First of all, we would like to appreciate the president and the vice presidents for realizing this, because this was our contention. Not that the opposition has won, but it's because this is the spirit of the nation. The country is built through consensus and compromise, where people have to forge a way forward how to serve the people. With the returning this bill into the parliament, it will open a new chapter where the rule of law will be able to be implemented.
John Agany, a lawmaker and former spokesperson of the National Assembly, says the legislature has final say on all laws.
This house is the first arm of the government. It's an absolute power. The president can even bring it back and it could be rejected also by the House. So there is no law that cannot be amended by this House. People should not worry. They should not panic about whether if it is brought for amendment with the correct time, then the House will be divided. No, it will not call for constitutional crisis, because this is our duty. As a member of Parliament, I need to amend the laws. But the institution concerned must call for the amendment, especially in this case, the President.
Addressing the 8th Governors Forum last week in Juba, Riek Machar, the first Vice President, said the Presidents agreed to send the National Security Act back to Parliament.
In actual fact, in that bill, there are four sections which are bad. Section 13, subsection 15. That gives the national security power of arrest. Section 13, subsection 15. 54 and 55 are whether you can have a warrant of arrest or you don't have warrant of arrest. 57 is operationalizing, also subsection 13. So four sections should be scrapped in that bill if we are going to have a democratic state.
On July 3rd, the National Assembly amended the law governing the National Security Service. The bill had been widely condemned by activists and rights groups. It became a law after the time elapsed before the president would assent his signature. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we go to Eastern Equatoria State, where leaders from Kuji Village in Eastern Equatoria State met with the Lafon County authorities to end tensions caused by what the community called unfair recruitment process by the American nonprofit, the Carter Center. The community has asked the county commissioner to expel the nonprofit from Eastern Equatoria State within 3 days. For VOA News, Kaltuma Venesa reports from Torit.
The Carter Center has been treating both human and animal suffering from guinea worm in Lafon County for 3 years and recently renewed a 10-year contract to continue working in Eastern Equatoria State. Unyango Amojo Angelo is a staff who says his contract was ended. He says he needs an explanation from his employer.
I was only just surprised with the notification, which did not satisfy me. And that is why I refused to sign it. If I were to do some mistakes, it would have been normal. I would have said, yeah, I have done 1, 2, 3. Let me sign the notification. It's normal. It's normal for someone to lose the job. But without anything, I cannot agree to sign that notification. And I told them. I even wrote to HR. Then he told me that it is normal. It is the contract of Carter Center is not permanent. It's not enough for me. How can you tell me the contract is not permanent when I am replaced? You are asking someone to be replaced. You are removing him, you are replacing him with someone, but he has no problem.
Ukech Simon, a resident of Ugwanya Boma, says communities of Lafon County have benefited from Carter Center's services. He says his community now treats drinking water to avoid guinea worm infections.
Educating people on how to treat water so that you drink in a safe. They're treating stagnant water that is within the community with something called a bee. Any guinea worm eggs that it laid. The guinea worm before, according to them, is they got like 1 person. Then most of the thing that they got it on animal.
Upuk John is a leader in the Kuji community. He says the community decided that the Carter Center should relocate to another part of the county.
They said they don't want Carter Center in Kuji. As well, they don't want also Carter Center continue operating in their land. So because their base, it is in their land. So therefore, they don't want Carter Center now in their land as well in their area. So that is the resolution they came up with. That very day, the commissioner requested, and we wait for the final decision from the high level. So now, right now, the community are waiting the response from Juba.
James Garang is the Carter Center Senior Program Officer in Lafon County. He says the Carter Center has sent a team from Juba to resolve the standoff with communities in Eastern Equatoria State. Garang says, according to his organization policy, staff contracts can end at any time.
It's just a non-renewal contract. That your contract shall end this month. It's not going to be renewed. Unless if they plan to call you back, that's where we will call them back. Community were complaining, like, what is the reasons of notifying these people? I told them this is the policy. Because not only here are staff being receiving the notification. In all of our South Sudan, where guinea worm program is operating, even that part of the pit, 1 person received the notification letter. I'm still following up with Juba office. So because by the end of this month, to look another people who will replace this staff.
Visa Likali, a member of the Eastern Equatoria State Legislative Assembly representing Lafon County, says the Carter Center needs to investigate the matter to prevent tension in the area.
I have seen a sense of saying a certain community is targeted in unemployment. So they have to investigate. If the field office doesn't come out clearly, I don't want the division among my community in the name of Carter Center. If Carter Center cannot address it, of course, my personal opinion is I prefer the unity of my people and let Carter Center leave them peacefully.
Etienne Concord is the Director General in the State Ministry of Health. He says the ministry has not received any complaint from Lafon County authorities about the Carter Center. Lafon County Commissioner Mangisto Ukech says his office is working to resolve the dispute between the Carter Center and Lafon County community leaders. Since 2011, the Carter Center has assisted South Sudan through conflict negotiation, preserving peace, and eliminating devastating diseases, including guinea worm. For VOA News, I'm Kaltuma Venesa reporting from Eastern Equatoria State Capital, Torit.
From Torit, we move to Kenya, where communities around the globe has just commemorated World AIDS Day. In Kenya, one health facility provides affordable care to everyone, especially communities of people living with HIV. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Outside the Coptic Hope Center for Infectious Diseases in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, scores of people wait patiently inside a small tent. The center, which began as a small clinic of the Coptic Hospital in Kenya in early 2004, offers subsidized HIV clinical care and treatment. Eva Mwangela is the center's program manager.
The program takes care of HIV-infected patients and clients. This program was started because of the need that was seen in the 1990s, and therefore they brought in the need of healthcare, providing free HIV testing, care and treatment for the infected clients, preventive services for those who are negative as well, and being able to handle community stigma and prevention in the communities around Nairobi.
The Hope Center has since expanded into a fully comprehensive HIV care and treatment program. It provides care to more than 55,000 people infected with HIV, with thousands receiving antiretroviral drugs or ARVs across Kenya, Zambia, Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, and Tanzania.
The program takes care of everyone in the community. We have the adults, we have pediatric, those are children, and we have youth. So we have three cohorts of clients, and therefore entirely taking care of a community. For adults, we have both, of course, men and women. For youth, the same. Inside the program, we have another program that entirely deals with pediatric. We emphasize on pediatric and prevention of mother-to-child transmission. We look at expectant mothers and their children as well.
The Coptic Orthodox Church Mission in Kenya runs the Hope Center with funding from the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, PEPFAR. Republican President George W. Bush announced PEPFAR to combat global HIV/AIDS in 2003. 18-year-old Stacy Akinyi is a mother living with HIV in Nairobi. She receives treatment from the Coptic Hope Center.
I got to know that I was HIV positive when I was in class 3. Every time my mom was giving me medicine and I wasn't sick, so I was curious. When I asked her, it took her time, but she took me to the clinic that I was going to. We talked to the counselor. From there is when she broke to me that I'm HIV positive. At first, it didn't seem like a big deal, but from the stories in the textbooks, I was worried. I was thinking that I was going to die.
For years, HIV/AIDS was a life-threatening condition. But now, Akinyi says people can manage HIV as a chronic health condition as long as they seek treatment with ARVs.
After a few counseling sessions, I got to accept, and as long as I can take my medication well, I can live just like any other normal person.
She says when she became pregnant, she was referred to the Coptic Hope Center.
I wanted to make sure that my daughter would come out negative. Growing up, I had a stigma from my friends and even some close relatives. I didn't want her to go through the same. I'm happy that the test that has been taken from my baby so far are all negative.
Under this year's World AIDS Day theme, My Health, My Right, the World Health Organization calls on everyone around the world to champion the right to health by addressing the inequalities that hinder progress in ending AIDS. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, President Joe Biden travels to Africa. Find out more after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. After promising to visit Africa 2 years ago at the U.S.-Africa Summit in Washington, President Joe Biden makes his first presidential trip to the continent, where he's visiting Angola with a quick stop at Cabo Verde. Analysts in Africa say the trip should have come sooner, and some are asking why Angola is the primary destination, given its troubling human rights records. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo has this report.
White House officials say President Joe Biden is looking forward to visiting the continent after a promise he made in 2022. But some analysts tell VOA that Biden's trip, which comes weeks before he steps down, would have had more weight if he had done it earlier. Lo Nell, senior political analyst for Oxford Economics Africa, spoke to VOA from South Africa.
I think his trip is less significant than it would have been otherwise, just because of the fact that he obviously withdrew as the presidential candidate. And then, of course, is now not returning for a second term. So it very much feels like an afterthought to his presidency.
After a short stop in the island nation of Cabo Verde off Africa's northwest coast, President Biden heads south to Angola. There, officials say he planned to focus on U.S. leadership on trade, investment, and infrastructure in Africa. He'll also recognize Angola's president, João Lourenço's regional leadership and global partnership on trade, security, and health. More importantly, President Biden will highlight one of his signature initiatives, the investment of the Lobito Corridor, a regional railway project linking natural resource-rich areas stretching from the Angolan port of Lobito to the Democratic Republic of Congo and Zambia. The corridor is part of a wider joint effort between multiple partners aimed at closing the infrastructure gap in growing economies around the world, officials say. Dr. Francis Brown, Special Assistant to the President and Senior Director for African Affairs at the National Security Council, speaking about the broader benefits associated with the project.
What I found really notable about the Lobito Corridor is that it isn't just about a railroad or critical minerals. It's also about the communities that are strengthened along the way. It's about more access to education. It's about agricultural products moving to market. And it's about increases in digital connectivity.
Last year, U.S.-Angola trade totaled approximately $1.77 billion, making Angola America's fourth largest trade partner in sub-Saharan Africa. Angola has vast mineral deposits and is Africa's third largest oil producer. But according to Amnesty International, the country's natural resource wealth has not translated to prosperity for most of its people, resulting in numerous peaceful protests against poverty, unemployment, and high cost of living. Nell says some Angolans may see a benefit with this Biden visit.
Maybe ordinary Angolans will recognize that Angola desperately needs to diversify its economy. And this is an enormous opportunity to do so, to move away from oil and gas and bolster other parts of the economy. So it has massive potential.
But others, including human rights campaigners and opposition parties, Nell says, will feel aggrieved by President Biden's visit because they see the Lourenço administration as being rewarded despite growing concerns about the shrinking space for independent civil society organizations and freedom of expression. In a new report, Amnesty International said that anyone who publicly criticizes the Lourenço government risks arrest. And, quote, if human rights are central to President Biden's foreign policy, then he must demand Angola's government immediately free arbitrarily detained government critics. Adriana Nuvunga, who runs the Center for Democracy and Human Rights in Mozambique, echoes that sentiment.
I commend the people of Angola and President Lourenço for hosting President Biden. It means a lot for the people of Angola. While I commend them, I would also want to encourage President Biden to ask those tough questions to President João Lourenço. We have a number of human rights defenders in Angola that are detained unjustly, unfairly, for doing nothing. They are languishing in jail and some of them in critical condition.
Nuvunga hopes that this could be addressed during this trip. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move to Sahel, where UNTAS are pressuring Western mining companies out of the region and partnering with Russia to fill the void. Niger recently invited Russia to explore its natural resources and confirmed communication with multiple Russian mining companies. Mali has also increased collaboration with Russia on exploiting oil, gas, uranium, and lithium in 2024 and is taking aggressive approach to Western mining companies through new tax laws and by arresting Western mining company employees. William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, discussed this development with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi.
So this is a long-term trend that's picked up speed since 2016 and then more speed in the last year or two. The long-term trend is a decolonization process in which some cases the Sahel countries turn away from France and turn towards almost anybody besides France to engage in their economic development and political assistance. It picked up steam around 2016 with the formation of the Wagner Group, and that was a bargain in which Russian paramilitary forces traded protection, Putschist regimes, usually anti-democratic and anti-Western regimes, in exchange for mineral rights. And at first, it was just things like iron and other, let's say, longer-term minerals. But it's increasingly moving in the direction of rare earths and other more lucrative mining opportunities for which there are discoveries going on in the Sahel. And the short-term aspect of this is the Ukraine war, in which Russia had to diversify its sources of plundering in order to support the war and the state budget. And that means literally stealing gold from Sudan and stealing rare earths from Sahel and sort of expanding these minerals for protection rackets into much greater plundering of local mineral resources to support the Russian war effort. And that has led to a really interesting situation in which Ukrainian special forces and Ukrainian weapons are coming into the Sahel to fight Russia. I've seen videos from Sudan and evidence from Mali, but across the region, because the more Russia can support its Ukraine war effort by plundering African mineral wealth at reduced cost at the profit of the Kremlin, the longer this war goes against Ukraine. So it's a terrible situation in which nothing is happening in favor of the people of the Sahel. It's all about geopolitics.
Some experts say increased Russian mining access in the Sahel will boost Russia's economy and mitigate Western efforts to economically isolate Russia. The Kremlin pursuit of uranium also aims to increase its grip on the nuclear energy market to improve its leverage with countries seeking to cut Russia's energy purchases. What do you expect a Trump administration would do to counter this Russian strategy in the Sahel region?
The Trump administration from 16 to 20, they had a Sahel envoy, Peter Pham, who I know quite well, who tried quite hard to not only help the Sahel countries in any way he could, but in keeping the Sahel front and center in the Trump White House. But then the question is, what it often is in areas of brewing conflict, is your goal containment or is it righting historical wrongs and investing? And there probably needs to be some of both. On the one hand, the states around the coup countries, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, where Putschists in an alliance with what used to be the Wagner Group, it's now called Africa Corps, are basically running the countries to the detriment of the people. But the countries around them aren't happy about it. Mauritania just complained very loudly. Senegal's been complaining for years. There's a lot of countries that would like help in stemming not just their terrorism threats, but the terrorism threats that are getting worse because of the neglect of terrorism. And so it's very important that all the countries that are pursuing a democratic route and open to a global economic rather than exclusive to Russia economic engagements get engagement and support. But back onto the coup countries, Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, and some other countries too, to some degree Sudan and others. Chad had some bumpy politics and is also getting overtures from Russia. And there are other countries in the region too. There needs to be full-on economic engagement that acknowledges the historical wrongs done by French colonialism and other historical wrongs, that then engages on the issues of poor treatment of the poor, of governance, of anti-corruption, and in the economic developments that these countries badly need. And that means actually putting money down. You can't just make everything about how Russia's eating your lunch and plundering the mineral resources. It has to be about how do we help you develop in a way that you recognize is positive for your country. And that's not just the United States and not just France, but the West in general, to fill a void and supposedly to right a historical wrong.
That's William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University here in Washington. He was speaking to VOA's senior analyst, Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. That's all from us on this Monday, December 2nd, 2024. We now leave you with Emmanuel Lasso and the song Intumia Junubin. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer Alfredo, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
December 1st is World AIDS Day, observed since 1988 in part of an effort to raise awareness of the AIDS pandemic and for mourning those who have died of the disease or as a result of it. This year's theme is Take the Right's Path, My Health, My Right. It is a reminder that everyone has a right to access the health services they need, including HIV prevention, treatment, and care services when and where they need them. This right must extend to everyone, regardless of their HIV status, background, ethnicity, gender, or where they live. The HIV virus kills its victims by undermining their immune systems. When World AIDS Day was first observed 36 years ago, a diagnosis of HIV/AIDS was a death sentence, with patient life expectancy of 2 years. And yet today, we are within sight of achieving an AIDS-free generation in the foreseeable future. Nonetheless, despite tremendous progress in prevention and treatment, marginalized populations remain at disproportionate risk of acquiring HIV. Individuals belonging to key populations frequently experience stigma, discrimination, and violence, and may even find themselves running afoul of laws aimed at certain marginalized groups, such as sex workers or men who have sex with men. But HIV/AIDS cannot be eliminated as a threat to public health without addressing the unique needs of these and other key populations. For our part, the United States is working through the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR. Since its inception in 2003, the program has successfully reduced transmissions, expanded testing, and saved more than 25 million lives in some 50 partner countries over the last two decades. PEPFAR is focusing on forging a future where every HIV infection is prevented, every person has access to treatment, and every generation can live free from the stigma that too often surrounds HIV, said President Joe Biden in a written statement. We are within striking distance of eliminating HIV transmissions. We have the science. we have the treatments. Most of all, we have each other, he said. Let us honor all the families who have lost a loved one to this disease and all the people currently living with HIV/AIDS. Let us remember the activists, scientists, doctors, and caregivers who have never given up in the fight against the HIV/AIDS epidemic. Let us recommit to finishing this fight together.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.